Welcome to Standard Intelligence. I am Dr. Jack Patton. This week I am joined by Sean Goddard, who has been absolutely crushing it in the last few weeks with online events. Obviously, we had Alexander Gordon Brown on that weekend after you'd both made the top eight of the season finals. So I'll be really interested to hear about how you feel about the online tournaments. But why don't you just introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. So I'm Sean. I've been playing Magic for about 7 years, but competitively for the last two or so. So I'm still really quite new to the scene, as a lot of people. Joined Team Axiom fairly recently, and I've been really enjoying the Magic competitive scene recently.
Good. Oh, excellent. Yeah, as you say, you started getting competitive, and then you've got on an Axiom pretty darn quickly. So that it speaks to a very high innate level of play skill. So,
I've certainly been running hot lately. So
long may it last. Played...
Yes. End of 2019, I qualified for the Players' Tour for the first time. I won Magic Online PTQ. And then got booted by Team Axiom pretty much at that same time. And then had a really incredible run in my first and so far only Players' Tour. It was Brussels.
Yeah.
I finished ninth. So.
That is also an absolutely incredible result to be taking home there.
Be good. I'm still pretty new to the whole scene, but definitely been really getting into it in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And excited to keep on going, especially with these new online tournaments.
Yeah. In some ways, they actually make competing a little bit easier, so we'll be talking a bit about that later on. Before we get into that, this is obviously the first episode of a new month, so we've actually got our Patreon giveaway to do. So I'm very quickly going to generate a random number between 1 and 7, and a lucky winner will be walking away with £15 of Axiom Now store credit, thanks very much obviously to our sponsors, Axiom Now, and the random number is 2, which is Adam Vartanian. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah, obviously I'll be contacting Adam and getting his details for how he wants to receive his store credit. But yes, if you would like to be involved in the giveaway, then all you need to do is become a patron before the 2nd of June, which is obviously a Tuesday. Don't know why I felt I needed to say that. Anyway, the 2nd of June, and you can do that over at patreon.com/SICast. Right then, Sean, let's sort of get into this. Obviously, the biggest tournaments at the moment online are these CFB-run, like Magic Fest onlines. Do you want to explain to people the generalities of how they work, how they could get into them if they're just playing Arena at the moment at home?
Sure. So these are all run by Channel Fireball. These are kind of the interim replacements for Magic Fest and Grand Prix. Since we can't do those in paper at the moment. So how they've worked so far, you have qualifiers all through the week, which are six-round tournaments, and they run them like five or six times a day, where if you go 5-1 or better, you qualify for a weekly tournament, or if you get 10 wins or more across the week. So say if you play three qualifiers and go 4-2, 4-2, and then two wins in your last one, you're already in.
Right.
Then if you qualify for the weekly, this is kind of like a traditional Grand Prix except online. You're looking at 8 rounds on day one. If you go 6-2 or better, you make it to day two. If there are more than 128 6-2 players, then some people at lower records will also get through to make the full 128. And for those, you're looking at a prize pool of $25,000 and the entire top eight get players draw invites. So it's quite a quite a sizable tournament compared to what we've seen online previously.
Yeah. Like,
definitely bigger than anything we were seeing before the current situation. Mm. And then top 32 in this tournament get invites to the season final. So after 2 weeks of this, with the weekly tournament and the qualifiers, you get a week with a season final. And the qualifiers during that week will be special ones where they're just five rounds and you 5-0 to get into the season final. And then that's like a smaller event, $50,000 prize pool, and PT invites for the top 32. So yeah, there's definitely a lot on offer at these.
Yeah.
It's worth playing.
Yeah. No, they when CFB started, you know, talking about this, I thought this was going to be very similar to what we were seeing from community-driven efforts, but they're just so much more valuable in the end that, as you say, these compare very favourably to paper Grand Prix and things, so it's worth looking into.
Yeah, so just in terms of, you know, I guess if you want to look at expected values, like prize pools, number of players, at the moment, they're very comparable to a paper Grand Prix.
Yeah.
At the very start, kind of because the qualification process was a bit trickier then. So you had to go 5-1 in one of these qualifiers. You couldn't get there just by doing well over a week. Mm. There were kind of not, there were like half as many players per event as there are now. And so the expected value was about twice what you could expect for turning up to a Grand Prix. Obviously, it varies depending on size and prize bet of the paper Grand Prix, but yeah, you're looking at, you know, $25,000 for 220-ish people. And yeah, exactly. You know, now with 450-ish people, it's still pretty good value, but
yeah.
But yeah, I was pretty happy to be one of the first wave of people realizing, actually, yeah, this is pretty good value.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's, I mean, because it's online, I think there's a lot of competition, right, with what you could be doing. You know, a paper Grand Prix, you set it up, it's the weekend away, you're going to be going and doing it, you know exactly what it is you're going to be doing and when it is. Because these are qualifiers throughout the week, you're battling against people who are still working, and also the fact that they could just be laddering, or they could just be playing leagues on MTGO, and it's like, okay, well, what does this get me? It's like, no, actually, it gets you quite a lot. So, if you've just been playing ladder, definitely consider doing these. How do you see the diff? Is it just the value, or is there definitely a play skill bump in comparison to like playing leagues or playing ranked, even at like mythic level?
There's a huge jump.
Yeah.
So, certainly. Again, it got different after the first couple of weeks because it started getting more people in. But the play skill is still very high.
Mm.
In the first few weeks, you were looking at 200, 250 people. And about 50 of those were the MPL and Rivals,
yeah,
who get automatically invited to the weekly. So that's a fifth of the field being MPL / Rivals. That's more than what you'd expect to find at an average Pro Tour or Players Tour.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's mind-boggling. Like, I think I played 3 or 4 MPL and Rivals players in my first one of those, my first one of these events. Yeah.
Jeez.
It was mad. I've got a round 8 winning for day 2. I hope I've got an easy opponent. And, oh no, it's Li Shi Chan, one of the very best players in the world.
Yeah, okay. Nice one. Okay.
Granted, I assume he's playing from Asia Pacific time zone, so I guess he was playing at like 5 a.m. Which might have made things a little easier, but still, it's ridiculously high play level. So anyone right now wanting to get better at playing standard at a high level, these are really good tournaments for that.
Yeah, that's always been one of the big things that I've kind of missed about Grand Prix / the bigger tournaments. It's just occasionally I get the chance to play against someone who really pushes me. I'm not just, you know, grinding 20 games in a day on Arena. It's I'm playing against people who are incredibly good at the game, and it just forces you to up your game. So, no.
Yeah, definitely.
This is actually, so ulterior motive, I kind of wanted to get you on so that I could get into this, because I've been sort of ignoring it, pushing it to the side. But the fact is, over the last few weeks, it's looked more and more interesting. So I certainly will be starting to get into these as well. So that's, you know, how it differs in terms of play skill. Is there anything else? Like, how does it feel in comparison to, you know, even going and playing an actual tournament, you know, like an RPTQ, a PPTQ, something like that? How does it differ there?
Yeah, so there are obviously huge differences. Mm. For one, there's kind of a more relaxed atmosphere. Mm. You know, you're sat in your house. Like, you know, you could be sat in your pajamas, sat eating your dinner. You could be double queued in Modo. You could be watching a film. I have done some of those. And yeah, you can be a bit relaxed about it. You're still taking it seriously. You're still trying to play the best Magic you can. Mm. But you're not specifically in a tournament environment. So that takes away a bit of the stress, which for some people will be a good thing. For some people will be a bad thing. Right? Some people just really thrive on that high pressure, you know, extreme environment of a top level tournament. And personally, I would rather be playing paper tournaments right now.
Yeah.
But we can't, so this is a fine alternative. You also get differences of like a practical nature within the actual game. So there are some things you can't do in Arena that you can do in paper, and some vice versa. So for example, bluffing. Like some people, you know, at very high levels of Magic and mind games where you really have a good grasp of how your opponent's thinking and how they're going to react, you can start to do some amount of, you know, bluffs and mind games or what have you in paper, which has never been what I'm best at. But there are people who will be doing those who can't really do that online. But there are other things online that you just don't get in paper. So you have the stop system on Arena.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where, you know, you can, the client, unless you're on full control, will automatically stop when you can cast a spell at relevant times, which is useful, but also you can kind of read that from your opponent.
Yeah.
So, for example, if they have a one and a blue up, and they're passing, and they clearly don't have a stop, and then you play a permanent, and suddenly they do have a stop, you can think, okay, maybe they have Brazen Borrower, because that card specifically, Petty Theft, you can only cast if there's a permanent on the other side to target with it.
Mm.
So suddenly you know, okay, they have that one specific card, and that gives you such a lot of information.
Yeah, yeah.
You can then add on that by saying, okay, I'm going to set stops in my opponent's turn so that I'm no longer auto-passing, and kind of do that, I guess, also bluffing on Arena.
Yeah.
Which all sounds, you know, kind of weird coming from a paper perspective, because these don't exist in the normal game of Magic, and I think people are quite slow to adapt and start using that sort of thing.
Yes.
But you do get small edges from doing that, and I think that will continue to pick up in popularity as people play more of these online events.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the sort of, I've gotten very used to just ignoring everything my opponent's saying while we're sitting at a table. You know, the old draw my card, sigh, pass the turn, and I'm like, yo, all right, cool. You definitely drew a counterspell. Yeah. You definitely drew a counterspell. Yeah. But online, it's a lot harder to read when someone is, as you say, being very good and setting, you know, full control with nothing to do, and then letting a spell resolve, or if they actually do have the counterspell. Because so many times, especially, you know, when you're ranking up, you can just go, okay, well, my opponent's on, you know, like I say, counterspell deck. I will play a literal test spell. And if the game pauses to let them try and counter it, they definitely have the counter.
I mean, even more than that, you can do stuff like you go into your first main phase. You think your opponent might have set a stop to bluff a counter.
Mm.
If you play a Skyland, that goes on the stack. If they're then clearly holding priority then,
yeah,
you're like, aha, you've set a stop. You don't have the counter.
Yeah. There's, yeah, like you said,
it sounds like nonsense, but it's,
this is the sort of like minor edges that you're going to get as you get to, towards the top end of play on Arena, that have their corollaries in Paper Magic. But as you say, they're just so different that you're going to have to relearn the whole thing.
Yeah. And what I will say is most of these aren't that important.
Yeah.
Like, you can do well in these without knowing any of these tricks, or only knowing some of the tricks, or, you know, reading stops but not actually actively setting stops. It's just, in terms of new things you have to learn while playing this, it's one of the biggest differences in terms of just a difference between the online and paper games.
Mm.
I do feel it's kind of interesting that prior to, you know, the last month, the only people really playing in top level Arena events were the MPL and the Rivals and the handful of other people who got into Arena Mythic Championships.
Yeah.
Which are now called Invitationals. So you had just this select group of people who were learning these tricks and were using this, but obviously, you know, weren't that widely talking about it, because there's just not that much general interest because no one else is playing these tournaments.
Mm, mm.
And now we're getting to a stage where actually, yeah, these, you know, Arena is now a common platform for top level tournaments.
Yeah.
I mean, so as well as these, I'll just mention in passing, there's the Red Bull series,
mm-hmm.
The Untapped series of Arena tournaments, which are coming soon. And those are set to be absurdly popular. I think the first one got over 2,000 signups in the first week.
Yeah.
Which is quite a lot, given that that actually doesn't have a very big prize pool.
Yeah, it was some ridiculous amount. Like, they were only paying out like the top eight. Once they got to 2,000, I was like, oh yeah, we should pay out the top eight. And it was just,
yeah,
it was such a tiny pool. But like you say, super popular, especially when you've got Red Bull's massive marketing push behind it. You know, there's still a lot of people who play Arena who aren't, you know, Magic players per se. They don't know about CFB. They don't know about Star City Games. So they don't know where to go to get this information. But as soon as you know, Red Bull goes, oh, you know that game that you play every couple of days and you put in a few hours? Yeah, we're hosting a tournament and it's, you know, it's small entry fee. Come and join us. And all of a sudden, everyone's just like, oh, yeah, I can play. Whereas, obviously, CFB gets the entrenched Magic players, the ones of us that know, you know, what's going on there. We've been playing long enough to know where we should look for these things. So, yeah, carry on.
Oh, well, just one thing to remember, though, is some of the people coming up through these events who, you know, who aren't well-versed in Magic, mm. but are finding these events for the first time, some of them will have, like, really high intrinsic skill levels.
Yeah.
I mean, you will get some really good new players coming out of these events. Like, as Magic reaches a wider audience, you know, perhaps looking at other parts of the esports scene and like drawing in players from other places,
yeah.
You will get new players coming up to these events. So,
yeah.
So,
I mean,
we have us, you know, as entrenched players here, like, ready to, you know, crush all these new players coming in. But some of them might actually be pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. It's not just that you'll be getting people with intrinsic skills that they just have, which I know is definitely a thing, because, you know, you see brand new players and they'll be like, oh yeah, this, and this, and that's why this. And you're just like, I thought you'd been playing for less than a month. How do you know this already? How have you worked out this? And it's just like, they just do. But you'll also be getting, as you say, people coming in from other places. We've got, you know, Hearthstone, Yu-Gi-Oh, Magic, sorry, not Magic, Pokemon TCG players. I spoke to people few years ago now, someone was like, oh yeah, this is my first Magic tournament, but I've been playing TCGs for like 15 years. And you will get people like that, and it's like, yeah, okay, maybe they're not a player you've ever heard of. They can still be really good.
Yes.
So, yeah. How are they run? Just as a personal kind of question. How are they run? Is it like through Discord, or is it through MTG Melee, or what's... What's the mechanism that CFB is currently using?
So the MergeQuest Onlines are all through Discord at the moment. Mm. There's been some hints that that might change in the future. Mm. But so far it's been pretty smooth, actually. Like, I was quite sceptical coming into it of, are we going to have loads of people lying about results and, like, you know, lots of chaos everywhere? Are we not going to have judges? But no, they have pretty clear, you know, you do this, this is the end of round procedure, this is the start of round procedure. And I guess the most important for me is there is a good team of admins and judges there. Mm. So I believe they've actually been employing Magic judges who obviously aren't able to judge Paper Magic events at the moment, but CFB are still, you know, paying them, saying, okay, we'll have you judge these events.
Yeah.
Which I think is obviously great that CFB is doing that for the judges, but also fantastic for the tournaments that we have experienced people running the tournaments.
Yeah.
So I've previously played in one big arena tournament series before all this, which was the Face It National Arena Series, and the actual online part of that had issues at times because you had people running it who knew about esports and knew how to run a tournament, but didn't perhaps specifically know how to run a Magic tournament.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, they weren't that well equipped to deal with rules issues and you know, issues that someone might have changed a card in their deck or anything like that.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, everyone in these events, it's like, okay, we have a full team. There are judges on that team. They're talking about, you know, they will catch anyone out who's trying to do dodgy stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's actually a very good point. Are they decklist open then?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You have open decklists. You submit for the tournament. You get to see your opponent's decklist. Like,
I mean, that's the only way to police it, right? You have to be able to see your opponent's decklist because you're the only person watching it, realistically. So if they play a card that's not in their deck list, you're the only person that gets to catch it. So, yeah.
Yeah, which has happened once, actually, in a qualifier.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, the way it happened, I'm pretty sure it was a genuine mistake from my opponent. Like, they, you know, they were playing Jeskai Fires and they had a Swamp, which their decklist didn't have, but decklist had just started playing Swamp.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, maybe they changed last minute but didn't update it. But yeah, I just, you know, noticed that, told an admin, and they got it fixed very quickly. So
yeah, I mean, these sorts of mistakes happen in paper where you literally have the physical cards in front of you. So they're almost certainly going to happen online. It's just, like you say, having a team of people that are capable of resolving these issues, who know what the fix is in paper would be, and so can apply something similar online. That's super duper important. So yeah, no, that's a good thing to see.
That said, whilst I think they're doing a good job of running these via Discord, I have heard really good things about MTG Melee.
Yeah.
I mean, so I haven't actually played any tournaments on MTG Melee yet, but I've heard great things about it. I'm sure you've heard very good things about it.
Yeah.
So I definitely want to see, you know, where that goes in terms of dedicated tournament running services. Mm. That can kind of streamline some of the stuff that has to be done manually at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. The, you know, pairings that have to be copy and pasted into a Discord chat and then you have to find you and blah, 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 blah. That, if that could be streamlined down, that would be amazing. I mean, obviously, what the ideal solution would be a customizable tournament system on Arena. But that is probably at least 2 years away, let's be perfectly honest. So, so yeah, something like Melee could be a really good interim solution to some of the problems that come up. And as you say, I have been hearing good things about it. The Jeff Hoogland runs his tournaments through it. So, and as far as I can work out, they've been running incredibly smoothly. So, yeah. So other than that, is there anything you'd like to see changed or added to them?
So they've really made some pretty big changes since the first 2 weeks.
Mm.
I mentioned
the being able to win 10 across the week gives you a lot more of a, well, I didn't spike it but I played pretty consistently well throughout the whole week kind of feel.
Yeah, and also the qualifiers, they're doing more deals. Like, I think this season you had a 2-for-1, where if you just bought one entry to a qualifier, you'd get another for free. And they had a day where all the qualifiers were $10 instead of $25. Mm. And like, you know, shorter, you had to go 3-0 in 3 rounds. And so they're doing more things like that, which is providing more opportunity for more people to qualify, which is definitely good, especially, you know, from Channel Fireball's perspective, because they want as many people playing these as possible.
Yeah.
And as a player, I want them to be successful and to keep happening. But in terms of feature changes, I'd kind of like some continuity between the different weeks, in that if you do really well, say in week one, season one, you're qualified, and then you do really well in the season one finals, you're then qualified from that to maybe to some players tours in the distant future. You're not actually qualified to anything in season two of the Magic Fest Online.
So you have to start again from the bottom and work your way up.
Yeah, which, you know, I'm not so much complaining about. It's fine, but it would be nice to see continuity in the sense of, oh, that's a, you know, that's a person who won season one finals. He's obviously invited to, they're obviously invited to season two, week one, or they're auto invited to the season two finals or whatever.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, the only real continuity with that is the MPL and Rivals are always invited.
Yeah, yeah.
To the weeklies. Yeah, which is fine, but again, that could be interesting change to make.
It would certainly give you some storylines, right? And I don't necessarily know what the coverage is feeling about that, because I know that they've been doing a lot of coverage of even like qualifiers and things as well as the weekends. So they've been really trying to push getting some of that up on stream. I just wonder if they maybe want to start developing the storylines of, as you say, you know, here's the player, here's one of the players that came in the top eight in the season one finals. Of course, they're invited to the season two finals. So you're not seeing them throughout the weeks, but when you come back, you're like, right, here's a player we're going to follow because they did really well last month, etc., etc. So yeah, no, that is definitely a thing that, like you say, it'd be nice, but it also ain't a deal breaker that they don't have it. And
yeah, absolutely.
And you, I mean, I have frequently given CFB and SCG a lot of rubbish for a lot of different things, but the fact is they got these working really quickly. So more power to them for just turning it on and being like, okay, we're going to do this. We'll fix the problems as we go. People want to play Magic. So no, good on them for that at least.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, okay then. So that's the tournaments themselves. Now let's talk about the deck that you've been playing, because I mean, we spoke about it a little bit last week with Rob Cadden, and he and I think were on the same page where it was like, actually Fires has sort of, it's gained a little bit of stuff and people have started building it, as you say, with Swamps in and things like that, but the deck is still intrinsically the same deck. Why is it so much more powerful now?
Well, so you have two things here. So you have kind of two very different Fires lists at the moment. So you have Karuga Fires, which is the classic Fires that I'd been playing last season a lot, and that I was playing even until like last week, and was still very strong. And so this is, you know, classic Fires, still all the same pieces, but now with Karuga, this new companion, you have this really high consistency that you never really run out of threats anymore.
Yeah.
You never have the draws where you have, you know, turn four Fires, Sphinx, they kill your Sphinx, you have no follower. It's always turn four Fires, turn five, play a thing, they're dead. So you have that huge increase in consistency from having the new companion. Where things have changed in the last 2 weeks or so is the rise of Yorion decks. So this is the 80-card companion, which is 5-mana, 4-5 flyer, flickers everything you control when it enters. What I've been playing in this event is Yorion Looker Fires, I don't know if there's a snappier name for it. Some people just call it Yorian Fires or Looker Fires. But basically a deck that's focused around not so much Fires of Invention as the interaction between Yorian and Agent of Treachery and Elspeth Conqueror's Death, where you aim to just every game get, like on turn five or so, get Elspeth Conqueror's Death or get Luca to polymorph essentially yourself into an Agent of Treachery, and then flicker it, and then from that double trigger, basically steal or exile enough stuff to have won that game. So yeah, you have the classic Fires deck, which is still pretty much the same as ever, just better.
Mm.
But you also have the Yorian decks, which again, they use Fires, but I'm not sure I'd call them a Fires deck as such.
Yeah.
You get some value off the Fires, but it's not essential.
Which is kind of great. I mean, especially when you're upping your card count to 80. Like, Fires of Invention decks, the only way I ever saw them, like, lose in the past, even forgetting the draws where, like you say, you run out of threats, the games that I saw Fires die was when it couldn't find Fires of Invention. So reducing the dependence on that card is incredibly powerful. But obviously you still leave it in there so that you can just sort of, as you say, you go, okay, cool. Well, I had Fires down last turn. I found my fifth land. So Omen of the Sun, Luca, sacrifice one of those Omen of the Sun tokens and I will get myself an Agent of Treachery for free. And it's just like, what was that turn? or even, I have something to sacrifice already, get my Agent of Treachery, Yurion, flicker the Agent of Treachery, double Agent trigger in a single turn. And it's just like, what is going on? So yeah, that's where Fires looks brilliant. But like you say, the deck doesn't seem to need it anymore. This is a super interesting list. I've actually pulled up your list from the weekend. So yeah.
Yeah, so this is... yeah, you get Fires, you get to do the completely ridiculous turns, but you don't need to do the completely ridiculous turns to win. You still kind of have a blue-white control, or like blue-white mid-range plan, where you just play Elspeth Conqueror's Death, you exile some stuff, you play your Planeswalkers, you get card advantage, and eventually, maybe you set up a big Yorian turn and steal a lot of your opponent's permanents. But you can also just grind out the game.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can play all these different angles and playstyles, and none of them are completely dependent on Fires, which I absolutely agree that the old Jeskai Fires decks, you needed to find Fires almost every game, and the games where you didn't have Fires just looked so much worse.
Yeah, they did. That was always the fear for me. Play, like, I always steered clear of Fires decks. So I went, I hate decks where I have to find one specific card. This sort of a deck looks a lot more in my wheelhouse. Like you say, it's not a control deck per se. It's more mid-rangey, tempo-y sort of stuff going on. You know, you're not playing counterspells because obviously you're playing a Fires deck, but you're also not, you know, playing this supposed to be a ridiculously long game thing. You're just like, okay, well, I'll play some creatures, I'll play some planeswalkers, we'll get some value out of them, we'll flicker them, and then we'll do it all over again, and then eventually you'll quit because I have so much value on the battlefield for the most part. So yeah, this is super interesting to see. Like you say, it's Karuga and Yurion are the sort of two pillars of this deck at the moment. So I'm really glad to have you on this week to talk about this version. What do you see as this version's strengths versus its weaknesses versus the Karuga version?
Sure. So, I mean, again, they're kind of just vastly, like, fundamentally different. The strength of the Karuga version is you are more consistent inherently. You're playing a 60 card deck, and you're, you know, almost every game going to do pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
Of you're going to curve into fires, you're going to play some things, and you're going to hope those are good enough. Where the Yorin deck excels is it gets to go over the top of the Karuga decks, and not just over the Karuga decks, the Luka Agent of Treachery deck gets to go over the top of other Yorin decks, where, you know, your opponent's playing 5-mana threats at a maximum speed of 2 of them per turn.
Yeah.
You're playing 5-mana steal your threat and then do it again, and you're doing that every turn. Yeah, obviously you're going to beat the normal Karuga Fires decks, but you're also going to beat the other Yorin decks, like the Bant Yorin, that might not even play Agent of Treachery, or if it does, has to pay full retail cost for it.
Yeah.
Whereas you're getting the agent down on turn 5, you're getting to steal their lands, stop them ever casting Agent of Treachery, you're getting to steal their Elspeth Conqueror's Death, reanimate your own stuff. You just get so much. You get so much value in that matchup by having Agent in your deck and having the access to it. Having twice as many copies in your deck, essentially, because each Luka is an Agent to Treachery.
Yes.
But also getting to have it on turn 5 half the time.
I mean, that's the, yeah. Like you say, cheating in an Agent of Treachery is definitely something you still want to be doing. What do you see as the Yorin deck sort of weaknesses, though? Is it worse against aggro? Because I'm not seeing any deafening clarions in the main board, or
yes, it's much worse against aggro. So you have a couple of things. You're not playing clarions in the main board. You are playing shatters, but even if you were playing clarions, you wouldn't be seeing them as often as the Karuga Fires deck, simply because you're playing 20 more cards that aren't Lethe Wraths. Which makes a huge difference. You know, as Jeskai Fires in the aggro matchups, how you win is by finding your Clarion almost every game, which is pretty easy to do. I mean, sometimes you win by Kenrith, but you know, the fact that you can pretty reliably have access to a Stomp on turn 2 and a Clarion on turn 3 or 4 means that they're not often going to get through, going to overrun you in the early turns. The aggro matchups are a lot harder. In particular, the one that's kind of risen recently is the red-white cycling deck.
So this is
like complete nonsense. It looks like the jankiest deck imaginable, but it's actually quite good.
Yeah, it's just a pile of like commons and uncommons, and then it does its thing. And you're like, oh, okay, that was surprisingly good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've had the pleasure of experiencing the deck's nut draw.
Probably not. I've only played a couple of games with it, so.
So I've had turn 1 Fox, turn 2 Fox Fox, turn 3 cycle 3 things, swing for 12, turn 4 kill you.
I mean, I've had someone very nearly do that against me. They were double foxed. But it was like, turn 1 Fox, turn 2 Fox, cycle, swing for 2. Next turn, like you say, cycle 3 things. And I'm sitting there going, huh, so I'm just like dead next turn, aren't I? Yeah.
Yeah. So they get to do things like that. They also get to play Zenith Flare. So even if you get to take out the entire board, if you're not actively gaining life, you will die at some point.
Yeah.
You know, and the things that the Yorin deck is doing to interact with the opponent, you know, you're stealing permanents with Agent of Treachery. Are you going to try and steal all their lands? Are you going to try and keep them below 4 mana? Like, you can sometimes do that, but it's really rare that's good enough. And then Elspeth Conqueror's Death does actual nothing against the entire main deck. It exiles precisely Lewis from the, you know, the companion zone.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
But they can just never cast Lewis, or only cast Lewis when it's getting enough value that your ECD doesn't matter. So that's 4 cards in your main deck that are immediately completely dead in the matchup. And then the rest of the main deck is maybe not faring quite as well as you'd want it to be in the matchup.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're just doing something that is so diametrically different to what it is they're up to that you have no way of... You're like, you know, you look at Teferi and you go, yeah, he's normally pretty good against the fast decks. And they're like, what do I even care? I'm spending most of my time putting my stuff in the graveyard. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I think cycling is the single biggest problem for the deck at the moment. Mm. That said, it's not impossible.
Yeah.
So some things people have been trying is the Wanderer in the sideboard. So what the Wanderer does, that prevents all non-combat damage dealt to things other than the Wanderer.
Yeah.
So you force them to use the first Zenith Flare on the Wanderer rather than your face.
Mm.
You also just incidentally turn off Dranith Stinger, the red cycling pinging creature.
Yeah.
You prevent that from dealing damage. And then occasionally you just get to -2 and exile a huge fox, which is kind of relevant.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because he works off of power or toughness. I can never remember which, but it's...
Four greater power.
Yeah, like you say, completely different from ECD that looks at its CMC and goes, yep, there's no targets in this deck. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what Oliver Chu had as his sideboard plan. So he was in the finals and obviously won this weekend in the weekly championship. Mm. He was in the finals against Cycling. And his plan was side out all four Agent of Treachery and all four ECD and bring in... two copies of Dream Trawler. So he still has his Lucas in the main deck, but instead of getting Agent, they're always getting a Dream Trawler.
That they are going to have real trouble killing, and then is going to gain you life to put you out of range of Zenith Flares. I like it.
There are certainly ways to combat the matchup, but it's tricky at the moment.
Mm.
Other aggro decks, again, you're nowhere near as good against aggro as Fires is, but they are winnable matchups. So, you know, you can beat the other Luka decks, so the other Lewis decks, you can beat the other, the various Obosh decks, but all of them feel like you're a bit on the back foot.
That's actually pretty interesting, because, I mean, I played a fair amount of Obosh over the last couple of weeks. And every time I fought against Karuga Fires, I have felt massively disadvantaged. So for you to say that actually it might swing slightly Obosh or Luris's way in the Urion matchup, that's really interesting to me. Because it means that there's still movement in the format, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I've seen a lot of, I mean, even in response to your tweet talking about it, it's just like all of the meta decks. I'm like, the meta's still moving around. I don't see really what the problem is here. We're still seeing some movement, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing very fast movement of the metagame at the moment. There have been very various theories of as to why that's so fast. Is it that people have faster access to cards online? Is it that we're getting a big tournament every single weekend, which we just weren't before this? You look at, for example, this Luka deck that I played in this tournament. I can't remember who built the list originally, but it was popularized by Crokies, the pretty well-known streamer, in a tweet on Wednesday, like this last Wednesday as we record this, which 3 days later in the tournament had a metagame share of 20% on day one. Yeah. And an above average conversion rate, so I can't remember what it was day two, but more than 20. So you look at this deck that's just come out, you know, just been developed, just been popularized, and already a fifth of the field is playing it at a Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Which is, you wouldn't expect that for almost any paper event.
Yeah.
Like, even... I guess so. You look at the Players Tour Brussels and that round of Players Tours, and you had the Inverter deck came out about a week and a half before that. You got a lot of people on it.
Yeah.
But you still didn't get close to 20%.
No.
Like,
I think you're right. I think a lot of it is the ease of access of cards online. It's like, even if you are financially capable of buying the cards in paper, you have to get them in time if you're taking them to a paper tournament. Whereas digitally, they're there instantly. There's also, I think, an interesting fact of, it's not just the fact that we're having a big tournament every weekend, it's that we're having the same big tournament every weekend. So people who are looking for new deck lists know exactly where to go, and it's making it much easier for our data to be amalgamated into a single melting pot that a lot of people get to see. So I think there's a lot of really interesting sort of effects going on to combine to, as you say, just a really rapidly shifting metagame. What would be your tactic playing into a metagame like that? One that's so fluid that is seeing changes on a literal daily or even potentially hourly basis. What do you do? Do you just go, I know this deck, I'm playing this deck, or do you try and swing with it?
I try and follow it to some extent. So I don't play decks that I actively think, you know, I'm not enjoying this deck. This just doesn't fit my playstyle at all. But I am quite a, I guess, versatile player. Like, I'm not going to flat out refuse to play any aggro deck, for example. I'll happily play a good aggro deck. But if I find a deck that I'm comfortable with and I think it's good right now, then I'll probably go with that deck. You have the thing of, you know, what's the best deck this week? And can I find the best deck? And if you find the best deck and you're good with that deck, then that is the ideal situation. It's really hard to tell sometimes what the best deck is going to be. You can use logic and try and, you know, think forward. Okay, well, this was the deck that won last time. This is going to be massively overrepresented now. So I want a deck that combats that. But sometimes you just, you know, you accept, okay, well, that deck's going to be really popular, but it's still the best deck, and I'm still going to play that specific deck, even if I have to play a load of mirror matches. There is some amount of metagaming, but also some amount of you stick to what you know you're good at, good with, and what you know is good. For instance, a few tournaments back, I think the season one, weekly two, I played Fires and did well with it. And then going into the season finals, I knew that there was going to be a lot of Fires. I knew there was going to be a lot of Fires. I also knew there was going to be a lot of Bant, like dominating the entire tournament. Because again, Crokies had popularized this deck and it had done well at the previous tournament. Andrei Strasky had just won with it. And I knew my matchup against Bant wasn't that great with Fires. But I also knew that a lot of people were going to try and attack the Bant deck and go with more low-to-the-ground aggressive decks, like Thrakdos Sacrifice, which had a good matchup against Bant. So after some, you know, consideration and consternation, I was like, all right, you know what, I'll bite the bullet. I will go with Fires, which I know is going to beat the Thrakdos decks and have a tough matchup against the Bant decks, but hopefully by tuning my deck to not be terrible against Bant, I can kind of get there.
Yeah. You decided to go sort of swing back round on the format by going essentially like two levels deep and going, okay, hopefully the Bant decks get beaten down a little bit by the aggro decks that I'll then get to beat. There's definitely a lot of things that you have to sort of make decisions on with that kind of thing going forward. Do you, just before we sort of end here, do you see any particular way of fighting the mirror matches, certainly in the Fires matchups, and I guess in general, what's your mechanism for playing against mirror matches when you know they're going to be prevalent? Do you look for the sideboard tech? Do you go, okay, let's go and try and find something off the wall that not many people have figured out is important yet? Or do you just go, okay, there's no way to break this out of the sideboard, I'm just going to be better at the deck and I'm going to beat you like that? What's your way of doing this?
Well, so if there is a mirror breaker, if there is one piece of tech that kind of swings it in your direction, then yes, you definitely do want that. Sometimes that just isn't the case. So this weekend, I actually felt favoured in the Luka mirror, not because I felt I was better than the people I was playing against, but because I think I'd had just a bit more practice in the mirror than some of those people. You had a lot of people picking it up just before the tournament, and I'd been playing for maybe one or two more days. So I'd picked up some of the, you know, the really niche little interactions, things like, you know, never playing your fires out in a situation where they could maybe steal it and then do a load of stuff and you get too far behind, or, you know, aggressively bouncing creatures and things that can make creatures to try and deny the opponent's Luka.
Yeah.
You had all these little interactions that become quite obvious after about a week of playing the deck, but maybe people didn't realize at first. That said, you just, for a tournament like this, you can't assume you're going to be favored in the mirror based on skill level alone. You have to have, you know, you have to either have a piece of tech that no one else has thought of, or a specific plan that no one else has thought of, in order to be strongly favored in the mirror. Because there are going to be a lot of very skilled people there. What you can do, though, is accept, okay, I will be maybe about 50-50, maybe slightly better in the mirror, but I think I'm going to beat everything else, so I'll still go with this deck.
Yeah. That was a mistake that I made very frequently back, Bank Collected Company, when that was a big thing. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm too far behind everyone else who's playing the deck. I'll have real trouble winning the mirrors. It won't be nice and easy for me. I just won't play the deck. Whereas in actuality, the deck stomped everything else that was going on. So I probably should have just played it and gone, you know what? I'll take my 50% chances in the mirror matches.
Oh yeah, I have absolutely made that mistake. I think Grand Prix Liverpool 2019, Grand Prix Birmingham 2019, which was Grand Prix Hogak.
Oh yeah,
I'd been playing Hogak Bridgevine, you know, since even before Bridge from Below got banned. I knew the deck pretty well. I hated the mirror, so I ended up not bringing it to that tournament. I ended up saying, okay, I'm going to be playing the mirror every round. That's going to be miserable. I'll win half of them, but... and I played humans and, you know, narrowly didn't make day two. And if I'd played Hogak, obviously I'd made day two. The deck was completely busted. Yeah. How was I that stupid looking back? But and it's a very easy pattern of thought to fall into. I do feel in the last few months I've got better at saying, okay, this is just the best deck. And I can play it, so I will play it.
Yeah, no. I mean, hindsight's 2020, so we'll always talk about us making those mistakes. But it's just recognizing that, like you say, this is the decision I have to make. If I'm good at a deck and the deck's a good deck, suck up the mirrors and just know that you're taking a 50% chance to win sometimes. Right then, I think we'll leave it there. Before we leave the show, there's actually a couple of events. Amazingly, I have events to tell folks about.
Wonderful.
Both Sneak Attack and Harlequins are running winner boxes this weekend on Magic Arena. So you should definitely go and look at and what's going on there. Sneak Attacks is going to be on the 10th, I believe. Is 10th Saturday? No, 9th is Saturday. Perfect. Okay, so they're on the 9th. Because they're hosting a winner box every Saturday, and then the Harlequins one is going to be on the 10th. So check them out. I believe it's Harlequins Preston will be running that event. So go and have a look at that on Facebook. I'll try and leave links in the doobly doo. So if you're getting this through your favorite podcasting service, hopefully there'll be links involved that you can just follow and find to those events. Right then, before we leave, Sean, what would you play this weekend? I think we all know what the answer is going to be, but what would you play?
Yeah, so I was pretty clear in my tweets. I will just play this deck again.
Yeah.
I feel like I'll look at the sideboard options to be better against cycling. There's definitely improvements to be made. People have been talking about tweaking the mana base, you know, making just slight, I guess, quality of life improvements to the deck as a whole. But the overall game plan, the core engine, I think is the strongest thing you can be doing right now in Standard. And even if you're expecting, you know, a lot of other people to be on Yorion decks, to be on this Yorion deck, one, you can't really justify playing Yorion decks without the Luka combo.
Yeah.
Because the Luka decks will beat you. And you certainly can't justify playing Kruger Fires right now, because the Luka decks will destroy you. So yeah, I would play this deck. If I wasn't playing this deck, I would play a deck that beats the Luka deck, like Cycling or maybe Obosh Rakdos.
Yeah. No, okay, cool. I think I'd be on Obosh at the moment, although I'm definitely going to give this deck a try throughout the week. Because, like you say, it seems super dumb. And then hopefully get on some qualifiers, maybe starting next week, try and get onto the CFB qualification train.
Good luck.
Sure. Where can people find you if they're looking to talk about Magic? Where's the best place to get you?
Sure. I'm on Twitter. I'm at _ Sean Goddard _. Probably because just at Sean Goddard was taken. that's basically the main place I am personally. And then there's also the usual channels for Team Axiom.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, if you want to talk to me, I am at JackPatton42 over on Twitter, and that's the best place to find me. I intend to be streaming. I'm probably going to be playing both of the winner boxes this weekend, so I'll be streaming those over on Twitch, / JackPatton_MTG. Come and hang out. Just very quickly again, like to remind folks to support our sponsors, Axiom Now. They are still selling, and obviously you can pre-order the Ikoria cards that you've been enjoying on Arena, because when they get stocked, they'll be able to send those out. And then obviously, if you want to support the podcast more directly, patreon.com/SICast. Sean, thank you so much for being on. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
It's been very good. Thank you.
And obviously, thank you all very much for listening.